are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the Sound and beyond. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You are very welcome to join me today as I talk to artist, writer, and just all-round creative person, Cory Parker. I'm going to be talking to her about her new book and memoir, La Finca. And La Finca is a story of love, loss, and laundry on a tiny Puerto Rico island. Welcome, Corky. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. It's really fun to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Corky by phone, but, you know, she's here in Port Townsend, so I feel like she's right here. At any rate, I'd like to read a little bit about what other people are saying about this book. First of all, our very own Erica Bauermeister, author of House Lessons, says, an enchanting and sunstorm-filled paradise of a book. And Elizabeth Cohen, author of The Family on Beartown Road, says, part memoir, part graphic fantasy, but 100% heartfelt adventure. And Alice Waters says, enchanting. The beauty of Vieque and La Finca shines brightly. Corky Parker's passion for the land, food, and culture of this Puerto Rico island is infectious. So, first of all, what and where is La Finca?
Well, in the here and now, in the physical world, because it's also somewhat mythological now, too, La Finca was my eco inn on Vieques, as you mentioned, which is a little island between Puerto Rico and the Spanish, well, and the U.S. and British Virgin Islands. The little cluster of islands is often called the Spanish Virgins. So it was 3 acres covered in handmade cabins in the hills of that little island.
And can you introduce us to the flavor of this book? It's a very beautiful book, dear listeners, because she puts in a lot of her own art and collages, and so we can't show you that. But how about a little reading, Corky, just a short reading to give us the flavor of the book, and especially how it relates to Port Townsend, because you have sort of an analogy of La Finca to a boat.
Yeah, I do. And it's a page that would be one of the more graphic pages. It is kind of a collage and a watercolor in a way of a boat. The book it's hard to describe because it's not the graphic novel or graphic memoir that we often hear about, but I was a creative director most of my career, so that means I love to merge writing with words and text with art and visuals. So the book has all kinds, like you said, collage, pen and ink, paint. So anyway, this is a two-page spread called My Wooden Boat is a House. And kind of above and around this big two-page spread of a boat says, a wooden house in the Caribbean is a rare and wonderful thing. Don't you get tired of working? Aren't you worried about termites or hurricanes? Why would you want wood? Fiberglass is so much more practical. In the boating world, few are crazy enough to go for wooden vessels, lifetime projects of love and toil. Similarly, smitten souls relate. Others just scratch their heads. The Casa Grande, like any boat worth its salt, has weathered many a blow. She's the largest in our fleet, a rambling, hand-built six-room guest house in the heart of the Finca. We live on her decks, sleep in her berths, oil her wood, and scrape the rust off of any hardware exposed to the moist, salty air. Like a boat, she creaks and groans, sort of bends in a good, strong wind. When we were new to her helm, it worried us. Back then, we thought we were in control and logic prevailed. We added massive stanchion-like cables, strapping them over her roof to hold it on in case of a hurricane. It's worked so far. The place is still standing. half of the stays are shot now, rusted through. And like loose rigging, their whirring sounds add to the nautical romance of Room 4 especially. One learns to turn liabilities into assets. Casa Grande sits where the land slopes southward, and so its big deck stands high off the ground, its prow facing squarely into the trade winds, which hail from the southwest across our midship. To harness them, slightly starboard, we hang our laundry. If you've ever taken down sails in nasty weather, you know how scary it is when they wrap around you, tugging at you with a life of their own. Well, our large queen sheets can be just like that, flapping, snapping, and flying, sometimes downright horizontally, enshrouding me in faded pink or bright apple green, threatening to knock an unsuspecting crew member or housekeeper off the deck. Many a time I've wondered if the long, scratchy fall down through the amapola hedge might be my eventual demise. One hand for the boat, one for yourself. It's a boating mantra. Don't let go. And it works here, too. Her bow is a big deck looking out over the hills that roll out to the Caribbean and on to my favorite horizon anywhere. Turquoise meets robin egg blue in its own clashing way, as if sea and sky are wearing colors that shouldn't go together but somehow do. They pull it off, except, of course, when enormous tropical clouds take over, separating the two with varying grays and pinks, charcoal to apricot. Off to port side lies St. Croix, showing itself as different sizes and versions depending on the day and haze. Theoretically, Venezuela's out there due south. Doubt we'll make it that far in this thing, but it feels good knowing a place as foreign and exotic as that is our next-in-line neighbor. In summer, right at dusk, the Southern Cross appears just above the neighbor's goat farm. It slips below the horizon quickly. Twilight doesn't last long in the tropics. The next thing you know, it's another jet black, star-studded night sky. A skilled sailor navigates by stars, but we just stretch out to watch them, share our salty, sandy tails, trying to chart what's coming next. I've yet to find the words to explain the rationale of a boat or the finca. What would I do all day in a little apartment without laundry to fold, a painted floor to touch up, tropical problems and Latin mysteries to solve? After years adrift, just when I learned to single-hand the place, I meet Bill, wooden boat guy, who prefers the lines of mid-century classics to anyone or anything young and sexy. He's an architect to boot. He gets the whole finca thing. He gets me. Bill cautiously steps aboard, and we are on course and underway.
Beautiful, beautiful. You were listening to Corky Parker, and she was reading from her new memoir, La Finca, Love Lost and Laundry on a Tiny Puerto Rico Island. Well, let's talk about more about you and your life and how this all came to be, because you didn't arrive at La Finca until you were middle-aged. So how did this happen?
I don't know, Chris. That's a good question. Is 40 middle-aged?
I don't know. Not now.
Turning 40 in Seattle. Well, no, I lived on Vashon back then, and I had a business in Seattle, raised my kids on Vashon, and I am a country girl, as they say. I've always been oriented towards country living, and I didn't really ever bond with the career I somehow stumbled into of working in marketing and technology and servicing corporate masters. I was pretty removed from it, but we did financially well for about 3 years, and somehow I got wise in those 3 years and quickly said, I want to do something with this, and I want to buy a place more or less out of the country and have an inn to run when we can retire, when our kids go off to college. And it was just a weird epiphany. I have these things every so often when I'm lucky and paying attention. So the search was launched by this turning 40 epiphany-like thing. The plan was put in place, and I explain all that in the early chapters. And we went out looking, and we found such a place, kind of exactly what I was looking for 6 months after I started. I thought it would take at least 3 to 5 years to find my dream, but I found it literally on our first trip.
So that's right. So What can you tell us that first trip more about? What did Lafinka look like? What was it when you found it?
Oh God, great! I guess you could say ramshackle. Of course, I have collages and drawings of it, trying to capture it. It was very magic for me, and I think for a lot of people in Port Townsend, it would resonate. It would be what we would say the old Port Townsend.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was handmade, mostly by a bunch of women. Certainly, alternative travelers. It was really well known as a women's retreat when I bought it. Very well known all across the country. And of course, this was before the internet, if we can remember back that far. So it was advertised on co-op bulletin boards and women's centers across the country. And it was built out of plywood. Most of the cabins were actually just plywood, and all the showers are outdoors. It was very, very rustic. I mean, I'm a rustic, funky gal, and it was way beyond. I knew I'd have to spruce it up a little bit. So
I was waiting for that word, funky. Yeah.
Yeah, very funky. Now in our family, we just say very Finca. It's Finca and funky are kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we did a lot of cleaning, and we put in a saltwater pool, and we did some painting, left a lot of the wood. Even plywood is kind of exotic in the Caribbean. This is old, really superior grade plywood that had lasted. But we'd paint the window trims bright turquoise or blue and whatnot, and just to add some color, and it became kind of a place that embraced the old and salty, and also just the bright and beautiful of the Caribbean.
Right, right. Well, you bought this place, and you had an idea that it was going to be kind of like an inn, right? And
oh yeah,
but a lot of your friends and a lot of people you know, and members of your family, like your mom, became the naysayers, and you have a great spread in the book called Beware of the Naysayers Who Say You Can't. Can you turn to that page and tell us about what the naysayers had to tell you?
Yeah, that's a great question, because in some ways, defying the naysayers is really the core story for the whole book, and maybe even for my life, and maybe for all of us. You know, learning to listen to our deepest place in our soul and spirit, and also learning to know what wisdom to take from others, but other things to run away or walk away from, or maybe just scratch your head and think about. An early editor asked me to make a list of the things I had done that were so different, or because I was always talking about how the thinker was very unique. And she said, tell me what that means. You know, how could you make a list? And I said, oh my God. And the list went on for about 50 things. So I decided to make kind of a classic graphic memoir style, almost cartoon, of these different things I heard over and over again. Things like, it says, beware of the naysayers who say you can't. You can't tell people about the bugs. You can't have mismatched linens. You can't have the front desk in your own living room. You can't post anything political on social media. You can't paint a couch. You can't repaint a dirty painted couch. You can't mix oil and water-based paint. You can't run an inn from 4,000 miles away or keep growing that garlic out of your kitchen sink. You can't not take credit cards. And you can't ask guests to use the same two towels for a week. You can't be serious about wearing that muumuu, and you can't cook dinner for Alice Waters. And that's just a very few of the many things we did sort of differently.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that our listeners have raised eyebrows about a few of those things and are nodding and saying, well, yeah, of course you can. Of course you can. Besides the garlic in the sink, there's a little tree frog too, right?
Yeah, that's right.
The pets around Lafinka. So there you are, the first summer, and you've got all these naysayers, and you see them for yourself as well. Can you tell us about, you know, the surprises of that first summer, things you weren't really prepared for or things that delighted you?
Okay. Yeah. I think the first week, right after my husband, he came it was always kind of more my vision and dream than his, but he was supportive wonderfully. So he was there for our first week. He took off and left me with the kids. Everything's great, fine. See you in a few weeks. We had a film production company, so he was going off to do a shoot on the East Coast. So perfect. I'm there with my kids. I'm feeling quite the. There's a little passage in the book about feeling channeling Isaac Dennison. I'm out of Africa. You know, I'm there in the.
I once had a farm in Africa, yes.
Yeah. So there I am, living my dream with my children. I think they were 5, 8, and 11 at that time, roughly. And our first night, starting in late afternoon, all of a sudden we see a chair fly across the deck. I thought, holy cow, what's that about? You have to keep in mind, we didn't really have windows or doors. That's how funky this place is. She said, oh, you just pull these shutters closed on the few times you'll ever have bad weather. Well, so on our first night alone, that bad weather kicks in, and it starts howling, and chairs are flying, so we have to pull all the chairs into the house. Then we have to find the lumber that's going to latch down these massive shutters, and one thing led to another. Power went out. Rain started pouring. The kids are in each of the guest rooms. We don't have any guests yet because it's our very first week. And one kid starts saying, Mom, my room is leaking. And then, of course, another. And then, of course, all of us, every room is leaking. And I am just absolutely convinced that I have just done our family in because I thought, can I get our money back? This is a joke. This is a horrible joke. This is serious. I was enraged. I had to run around barefoot fast looking for pots and pans to collect the water, thinking about all the bugs that might be on the floor that I'd seen but I couldn't see now because it's so dark. I mean, that was the storm, I think, was a key part of a chapter because from the get-go, I think it was the Finca's way of telling me the climate, the place, the culture, the island is actually in charge and I am a guest, and I better be damn humble and get that lesson going really fast. Mm-hmm. And that's another theme of the book, is that I'm not in charge, but the place is. And despite that relationship, I fell madly in love with that place and let it be in charge and try to learn as much as I could from it. And I indeed learned a lot.
Yeah, well, that certainly was a baptism by wind and water. So what turned it around? Why did you decide to keep working that summer and stay? And also, this answer might involve your kids as well and their attitudes and willingness to be there.
Yeah, you know, I think I say that in the book, the next morning the sun came out. And all of a sudden, everything is glistening, and the grass had been kind of getting brown. It had been a drought that year, and all of a sudden, things had, in one night had turned green, which I'd never experienced that phenomenon. But it was so beautiful. I never contacted the owner, asked her to pay for the roof job. In other words, I was just over it and back in love from the next morning on, and my kids were a tremendous part of that. Their enthusiasm and love for the place has lasted through today. They are now all in their 30s, and they learned, like I did, that to love a place like a boat or like a relationship is to work very hard for it and with it. Boy, that was just, it became a huge part of our family.
Right. So instead of sitting around and saying I'm bored or complaining about things, they did their best to pitch in and be adventurous and just roll with it. So congrats to you and to them. So tell me, you know, there's a lot about paint and duct tape here this first summer and ongoing. So tell us about the importance of paint and duct tape.
Oh, that's so funny because you don't know, but the working title of the book for many years, because this book did take 10 years, but it was Duct Tape Dreams. That was the name of it. So it's really funny that you would ask. So what's the role of paint and duct tape? I have to say that's one of the most original questions. Thank you. Paint is because I love color. And I don't know, I never really call myself an artist, but I do play with art a lot. And I love color. My house is filled with it. I kind of can't leave things alone.
Well, you were pretty fearless about your use of paint.
Well, actually, you know, people, kind of what I call hipsters, would come and say, oh, I just love your palette. Where did you get this unique palette? And I'd kind of laugh and say, those are the only three colors that they had in any store on Vieques at the time. Vieques was really, it, honest to God, was not included on many maps. Mm-hmm. When I bought, it is now, it has been discovered. It's still offbeat. But so we worked with whatever paints were there and got real creative. And that's how I learned that you could, in fact, I don't know if you should, or I don't know what the problem is with mixing oil and water-based paints, but I had to get the colors I wanted. You know, I had to stretch the three that were there. So, and then what was the other, the role of duct tape. I think that is, I guess, maybe a little symbol of get her done and mm-hmm. not care too much about, and that's just my way. I'm not saying it's the way we need to live or anyone else should, but for me, I got to get things done, man. And so I would run around in a little carpenter's, you know, with a carpenter's apron in front of my shorts, always had a roll of duct tape in there because it's amazing how many things you can fix or do. You can frame a picture. You can, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. whatever.
And what happens to duct tape in the heat in the tropics?
It's one of the few things that often gets stronger because it melts onto the item. So it can actually last.
Uh-huh. Okay, so there you go. You made it beautiful. You made it artistic, and you held everything together and kept it working. Although, you know, it was a simple place, and I think that you probably let people know before they came exactly what to expect. You know, you got to tell mm-hmm. them, you know, what's there and what isn't there. So, but you had guests that were, you know, really up for this, and you had people that really weren't. So maybe you could tell us about a memorable guest or two.
Oh, my goodness. A memorable guest or two. Well, I think in general, we did try to make it very clear to people because nothing worse than a cranky guest. So I never liked to charge very much because I wanted to keep my guests with like low expectations. If you start charging a lot, people said, you know, you could charge a lot more, but then people would expect more, and I don't want people to expect a lot. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, I hate to make fun of my guests. I you know, and a lot of people have said, how come you didn't tell many guest stories?
Oh, okay.
there is the famous kind of an infamous one with our family where. This is part of a chapter about some poet, luckily I don't remember his name, but from a very groovy town in the West, and they were coming in for their family reunion, and he came down the next morning looking quite upset because he couldn't find his briefcase, and he said, it looks like it was stolen, and I said, my God, we haven't had anything stolen in years and years and years, and if it was up in your room, I can't even imagine, and he goes, no, I didn't leave it in my room. He left it in the, you could call it the living room or the lobby. Mm-hmm. Like, you left your briefcase in the lobby? Like, that's a weird thing. If you're staying at the Ritz, you know, I mean, like, who would do that, let alone at a place right. in the jungle?
Yeah, and there was no really doors or walls in some areas of the guest
houses.
Yeah, in the
houses. Area that
he left right, it. Right. Yeah, I've stayed at places like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't leave
it had
$3,000 in it, and his computer, and Euro dollars, and his passport. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and then it's this whole thing unfolds. They get mad at me. I'm like, you guys are nuts.
And then you had wonderful guests that kind of became part of the crew. I mean, they love to help out. And
that's much more common. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a whole family, what we call the Finca family. Guests would come back year after year after year. I mean, guests that, you know, deans of East Coast schools would come down for Christmas. One woman, her child had never had a Christmas with a Christmas tree. Their Christmas was palm trees at the finca. They didn't know about presents under the tree. They just knew about going sailing and snorkeling. Right. And we became friends with, we'd throw potlucks on the deck with all our different guests from around the world and introduce, you know, this family to this couple, to this individual, to sailors, to physicists. I mean, it was a motley crew, but God, we all somehow got along. And I am still in touch with a lot of them, which makes me a very lucky lady.
It does. So unless people think that this is all sweetness in life, there are a lot of like big shocks that occur during the years that, you know, you started being the innkeeper at La Finca. And, you know, you survived. One important guest was Alice Waters. So tell us about how Alice Waters ended up at La Finca.
Yeah, I wish I could take a lot of credit or even any credit for that. Alice came because she is a close friend of the woman who owned it. An old friend of mine bought my ex-husband's half after he and I divorced. And so Anne had worked for Alice in Berkeley at Chez Panisse. I had grown up around the corner from Chez Panisse. I'm just a Berkeley kid, or used to be. So I've known Alice probably most of my life, I guess. The sad part, the funny part was that Anne called up to say, Alice is coming. And I said, great, when are you guys coming down? And she said, no, I can't come. She's coming on her own after she finishes her trip visiting Obama in the White House. And I'm like,
this is hysterical.
So I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like the kid sister to Anne, and she's my older sister's best friend. I am incredulous. I know Alice well enough to know how, I don't want to say persnickety, but let's just say incredibly clear about her tastes and her likes. And it's, you know, for good reason. She is the consummate, not just restaurateur and cook, but just almost gracious hostess. And there I am, me trying to duct tape, you know, a meal together.
Without Anne, the other chef.
Without Anne.
or any special food that, you know.
And then her assistant calls up and I stupidly say, let me know if there's anything I can do to make your trip easier, anything you might need. And she goes, oh, if we could have some fresh goat cheese, some fresh local salsa. And I'm like, Puerto Rico doesn't have salsa, and we don't have goat cheese. Like, what the heck? You know, she was, it was just like, cause if we got Doritos, honestly, if we got Doritos, we were lucky.
Here, Alice, have some Doritos.
I had close to a mini nervous breakdown in getting ready for her until I had another one of my, I guess, epiphanies when I just got clear with myself that this week with her was going to be hell if I was nervous. Mm-hmm. I just had to get to my truest self, and something happened. It snapped, and I did. And I just thought, she's all about authenticity and food. This place it's always been all about authenticity. And man, boom, I'm just going with who we are. The best plywood you could find, the best thrift store cotton. Bedspreads. She loved the place. She loved it. She's a small woman, and I apologized once if I said, if I'm getting too bossy about what you should wear when you go snorkeling. And she was, Corky, don't worry. You and this place, it's all perfect.
Yes, and that was really an important part of this book, and I know that my listeners will resonate with that and this book. It's called La Finca, Love, Loss, and Laundry on a Tiny Puerto Rico Island, and we've been talking to Corky Parker. Thanks, Corky, and stay tuned to listen to more Book Lovers Cafes on the podcast page. Thank you. Bye.